tonight, Turtle, with you until 10 o'clock each and every weeknight here on 92.9 The Game. Been a heavy Falcons day on the program, as it should be. Talked a little Georgia Bulldogs as well. I guess the Braves are playing a baseball game, but that's about our baseball coverage for right now on 92.9 The Game. There's nothing to talk about. I guess recently the conversation about if Snit's coming back has reared its ugly head again, but Alex Anthopoulos on our air and to the media basically said, there's nothing to talk about right now.
Snit smoked today too.
Yeah, we're going to give him the grace to decide, essentially. Bless you, O. That was a violent sneeze, I'll call that. This is at least what it looked like from behind the glass. It just seems like they're going to take their time on this, and they're just going to sort of let Snit be the emphasis, the epitome of the decision. And I don't know. Oren, after this year, I don't see how he comes back. It's been such an uninspiring, injury-rattled. It just feels like you need something new. It just feels like you need a new voice, and you got to get younger, and you got to get with the times a little bit more. Snit's one of the last true gut managers in the game. I'm not saying he doesn't use analytics, but I know they give him the leeway to, you know, use his 50-plus years of MLB experience to make decisions. And up until this year, he was pretty damn good at it. And a lot of it, not his fault this year, but he has made some uncharacteristic mistakes this year too. And we need to be honest about that. The Braves are entering an interesting period here with a lot of guys under contract, but a lot of moving parts in the rotation and the bullpen and the outfield. I think next year is going to be a huge year for everyone involved in this organization. I don't think I know, and we'll see what happens. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle with you for another hour here. Did want you to hear from Zach Robinson. He did speak today, the Falcons OC. This term is getting brought up again. And this is just annoying at this point. I think because of what happened last year with Kirk Cousins, when they weren't really able to use any of whatever drops of athleticism he has left in his body, which is not a lot, not that he ever really was, but the pistol formation is essentially a term that got in the crosshairs of Falcons Nation last year, and it really became irritating to hear about it over and over and over again. And now it's reared its ugly head again with Zach Robinson mentioning it about using it with Michael Penix Jr. Zach talked about why they were so heavily reliant on it and basically making it a focal point of the offense once again. And I don't understand why this is a thing again. I guess if he feels like that's the best way to execute the offense, that's why he's the OC, but this is what he had to say about it.
Yeah, I think, again, week to week, depending on who we're playing, the schemes that we're, building, a lot of stuff, everything is built through the run game. But I think the pistol does keep you pretty balanced from a run-pass standpoint. Obviously, in the offset gun, there's tendencies to throw the football. And so being able to stay completely balanced with what we're doing is what we're trying to do. From a run, play action, keeper, screen, all those things that come with it. And again, it's part of our offense. We'll pick our spots when we need to go under. But our guys feel comfortable with it. Our quarterback feels very comfortable in it, knowing that that's the way he operated mostly in Washington. So, but again, week to week on what that is, depending on what we're seeing on the other side of the football and some of the stuff we're trying to activate from a run game and moving forward.
I mean, all right. As long as you win, like, I don't care, but I just don't want this to be a thing again. Because last year this was a thing for several weeks in a row. And with Kirk Cousins, listen, I know Michael Penix Jr. is not Kirk Cousins, so hopefully this just doesn't become a thing and we're being asked about this week after week after week and him having to justify and explain why such a particular part of the offense is run that way. Again, if you get results, then it doesn't matter, but when you have 69 total yards on the ground and your essentially rookie quarterback has to throw it 42 times in week one, that's not exactly a game plan for success. So that's why it was brought up again this week. He was also talking about Brian Flores and managing against him this week.
Yeah, they're a great challenge, very similar to last week, you know, with Todd Bowles. I would say on our schedule, those two are, from a schematic standpoint, make you think through everything. And so got a ton of respect for those guys. Obviously, we saw them last year. There's a lot of similar players. There's similar things that they do from a front and coverage standpoint. But they make you work through a lot of things and make sure that you're on the screws with the details and making sure you don't have dead plays and things like that. But I'm sure there'll be something that's new that we haven't seen, and that's where you just got to adjust in real time and take it from there. But definitely, you know, they got great players. They're very well coached. Have a ton of respect for B. Flow and just what he's done over the course of career. But like I said, they definitely make you prepare for everything.
Well, considering things went so swimmingly in week one, I'm sure we have all the confidence in the world that those screws are going to be tight, Mr. Robinson. I just got to see it. I want to believe in the highs from last year that those are not outliers, that those can be the norm and the example, but I was not impressed last week. He was asked about both J.J. McCarthy and Michael Penix, two young bucks showing a lot of promise in the NFL.
Both those guys have had a ton of success throughout their careers. You know, a ton of respect for J.J. McCarthy. We obviously looked at him coming out too. And, you know, both those guys have had a ton of success. The college level, it's really cool to see them at the pro level doing the same thing.
Yeah, J.J. McCarthy, again, if you didn't stay up to watch the end of that game, it was like a Porsche that was stuck in neutral. And then all of a sudden in the fourth quarter, you hit fifth gear. Like, he went from looking awful to looking incredible in the span of a half of football. So J.J. McCarthy found his groove, found Justin Jefferson. The running game got going a little bit, and their offense is going to present a challenge for the Falcons, where I think going into the year, a lot of us were like, I don't really know about the Vikings and J.J. McCarthy. Well, now you do, because you just saw him do it against a divisional opponent and a team in the Bears that are desperate to prove that they made the right decision with their quarterback and Caleb Williams. And at the end of the game, J.J. McCarthy outplayed Caleb Williams 10 times over. 404-726-0929, Chris Thomas tonight, hearing from our OC, Zach Robinson, that spoke today. He also talked about the offensive line and the progress that they're making.
Yeah, it just it takes time. That unit, like you're alluding to, it is continuity and reps and, you know, feeling blocks and understanding the angles that you're driving people on. So it absolutely is something that we know, shoot, week one to week five, we expect to see a big jump in that. To week 10, we expect it to be, you know, firing on all cylinders. So we understand it's a long season. It's not a one-game season. Those guys will just continue to grow together from a communication standpoint, and then just from a fundamentals and technique standpoint, expect those guys to just keep getting better together.
I hope so. They better, as I've been saying. That was not good versus Tampa. It just, I mean, there's really nothing else to say other than it was bad. I mean, nobody, Chris Lindstrom got eaten up by Vita Vea. Jake got beat a couple of times. We know about Elijah Wilkinson and the penalties. Nothing went the way of the offensive line that we were hoping we would see some more continuity after Caleb McGarry went down. But we unfortunately saw quite the opposite, and it's going to be a huge challenge versus a very stout Minnesota defense who's in their building on Sunday night. And that was the final thing we'll hear from Zach Robinson on. He's expecting a raucous environment on Sunday in Minnesota.
Yeah, the biggest thing is the operation, you know, making sure I get the calls in and out of the huddle, you know, making sure we pick our spots. You know, obviously you're on the silent cadence, and so we got to be on the screws from a communication standpoint up front, from Mike's communication in the huddle, getting to the line of scrimmage, all those operation and procedure things in an environment like this. You know, we played there last year, but I'm assuming, you know, Sunday Night Football, their first home game, is going to be rocking even more than last year. So biggest thing is, yeah, just the overall operation. I have my part in it, making sure that play calls are in clean for Mike. He can get in and out, and those guys can communicate and go play.
Well, here's the thing with that, Oren. Last week, they did it again. They had an operational error coming out of a TV timeout, and they had to call a timeout because they couldn't get the damn play in. Come on, Zach. See, this is the stuff I'm talking about. Like, I'm not impressed right now. I need to see more. I need to see consistency. I need to see functionality. And I need to see not just those things, but I also need to see you excel and make the most out of the weapons on this offense. Even if Drake and Darnell aren't 100%, you still have plenty. Ray's look great. Pitts look good. Bijan and Tyler, we know what they can do. You got a couple of young guys that might get in the mix at receiver. You have enough. That's the point, right? Like, we have enough on this offense that it shouldn't look the way that it did on Sunday, even against a good defense. And again, guys, the Bucs have a good defense. I think at the end of the year, they're going to be, I don't know, top 10, top 12. Maybe that's a stretch. Like, they're not a top three defense in the NFL. And your offense just looked stagnant and ineffective, quite frankly. So I think a lot is on the line for Zach Robinson on primetime this weekend. All right, when we get back, we're going to hear from one of the best in the biz in the NFL, Sam Munson. He is with the Check the Mic podcast, going to go all over the league, including here in Atlanta. What did he think about the performance of Michael Penix Jr., as well as our situation here in the A? Sam Munson, one of the best in the biz, coming up next. You don't want to miss this conversation on Chris Thomas Tonight. Turtle on 92.9 The Game. Welcome on into the 8 o'clock hour, halfway home with you on a hump day Wednesday edition of Chris Thomas Tonight. Turtle with you until 10 o'clock. Let's waste no time getting to our next guest on the WadeFord.com hotline. One of the best in the biz, Sam Munson, co-host of the Check the Mic podcast. Sam, a lot to digest from an extremely eventful week one in the NFL. Let's start with, in my opinion, and I think a lot of people's, the Bills and the Ravens game was just spectacular. But since then, you hear all these narratives about, well, the Ravens have lost nine times when they've had a 90% win probability in the fourth quarter, and Lamar Jackson can't get it done in the playoffs. Are you a believer in that sort of a thing, or do you take each season on a case-by-case basis?
I think there's a little kernel of truth in it. It's like all of these things. You know, there's usually some kind of signal in there, but usually the data point isn't as clean as people want it to be. The Ravens have also had more of those situations than anybody else, you know, since Lamar Jackson's been around. Basically, they've just been one of the best teams in the NFL over that period. So they're leading going into the fourth quarter by double digits, you know, more than anybody else in the NFL. But they have lost a greater percentage of those games than normal teams or than the rest of the league has. And they would seem to be unusually well positioned to see out those games. So they've lost a greater percentage, and that feels like the opposite of what you think should be true. So yeah, I think there's probably something of an issue there for the Ravens in those games.
Does Buffalo have enough around Josh Allen where he doesn't need to do that every single week?
Yeah, I think so. You know, we saw that last season as well. Most of last season was kind of typified by Josh Allen not needing to be Superman. And then every now and again, he would need to. And that's when, you know, you get the best out of him. So obviously that was a game where, look, the Ravens, I think, were the better team for the majority of that game. And Josh Allen needed to be Superman late in the game to have any shot of winning it. They also needed some, you know, some Baltimore helping them out. Derrick Henry fumbling the ball away. Yeah, I think in most games, they're not going to be, number one, they're not going to be running up against a team as good as Baltimore. Number two, they should have more help from elsewhere and not have to rely on Josh Allen as much.
Were you more impressed with what Aaron Rodgers did or what Justin Fields did in that game?
I think Justin Fields played better overall. You know, Rodgers was impressive as well, but for slightly different reasons. I think the most encouraging thing from Rodgers was how much he was playing within Arthur Smith's offense. And, you know, I think it sounds kind of like a negative or a pejorative on Aaron Rodgers that he wasn't necessarily as good as the stats or the numbers would say. But I think that's a good thing. It means that this offense was functioning and Rodgers was playing it the way it's supposed to be played and not fighting the system the way he did sometimes with the Jets and, you know, just running what he wants to run. If Rodgers is willing to, you know, compromise and work as a team with his coaching staff and with his scheme, then I think you're going to get the best version of Rodgers. And he showed, you know, that he can still make all of the throws you need him to in that sort of situation.
Sam, look no further, unfortunately, than my fantasy team, who had the Steelers defense in week one. What was up there? The projected to be one of the most elite units in the NFL came up completely flat.
Yeah, that was one of the more surprising things of week one. I think part of it is, look, you got to give credit to Fields and the Jets offense, and they were much better than people expected them to be. And Fields is an unusually difficult quarterback to try and stop because he's incredibly athletic. He's got an arm that can make all the throws. If he is seeing it and turning the ball loose, he can be an incredibly prolific passer. Consistency has been his problem, and you know, being willing to pull the trigger and put the ball in the air. But if he does do that in the game, you're going to have your work cut out as a defense to stop him. But yeah, I think you know that they also did well in the offensive line. The Jets, you know, Pittsburgh's pass rush in particular, T.J. Watt did not have the kind of factor in that game we were expecting him to. So I think you know there's a reason the analytics guys would you know they went as far as saying defense doesn't matter at one point. I think that's definitely overstating it. But I think the point is, defense most of the time in today's NFL is kind of at the mercy of offense. If the offense goes out there and executes, you're going to have a tough time having a really good defensive performance.
Are the Dolphins broken?
It certainly looked that way, yeah. I mean, man, the vibes around Miami all offseason have been terrible. It's, you know, Tyreek Hill drama. The whole thing has just sounded bad, and they were getting wrecked every time they played anybody in a joint practice, and you know preseason didn't look amazing, and you know you're sort of talking yourself into, well, look, it doesn't necessarily mean anything until the regular season starts, and you know they tend to start well, and let's see what it looks like. Well, it looked disastrous. It looked every bit as bad as the vibes that have been there all off season. So yeah, if they don't pull themselves out of this quickly, they're in deep trouble.
What do you make of what's been up with CJ Stroud and the Texans? This is now bleeding over into the next season.
I mean, I think that offensive line is a major problem. It was maybe the worst offensive line in the NFL last season. And I think, you know, Bobby Slowick took the fall for that and he was run out of town, but they hasn't fixed it. I mean, this offensive line is still a bad unit. They traded away the one good player from it from a year ago in Laremy Tunsil. So I think it was always optimistic to expect the line to get better with the one good player having been sent out the door as well. You know, it wasn't all personnel problems. There was obviously a schematic failing last year as well. They looked like they'd never seen a stunt before, or any kind of pass rushing game up front, pressure packages. They were confused as much as being beaten on a man-to-man basis, but it's still a bad group on paper, and it looks like it's still going to be an issue.
Do you have long-term injury concerns now about Brock Purdy? I know they just paid him a truckload of money, but he seems to be having an issue more than not.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a bit early to kind of, you know, label him as injury prone or think it's going to be a major problem going forward, but he does play the game with a style that doesn't necessarily protect himself. You know, his late in the down, ad-libbing, improvisational type of play, which is why he's been sort of so good for this 49ers offense, you know, because that takes over when Shanahan's offense runs out of ideas, but it also does expose him to a lot of hits that some other quarterbacks don't take. So, yeah, I think it's always going to be an inherent risky side of his game.
Talking with our buddy Sam Monson, make sure you check out the Check the Mic podcast, one of the best in the biz, breaking down the NFL. Chris Thomas, Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. Speaking of non-overreactions, were you worried about what you saw from Detroit?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, I think Green Bay are going to be a very good football team, and they may well be one of the elite teams in the NFL this year. So it was a high bar. But, you know, the concerns for the Lions coming into the season were, you know, do we see any signs that Ben Johnson not being there has kind of affected their eye for details, you know, their execution on offense? And then the other element was, you know, no Frank Ragnow anymore at center. He's retired. They were already shuffling the interior of that offensive line with players moving on at guard. You know, do we see signs that that's a problem? And coming out of that game, you would say both of those things look like a problem. So that, I think, is definitely a concern. Look, the Lions are they're too good to not be a good football team this year. There's too many elements that are still positives for them. But the two things that you were worried about coming into the season both look like issues against the Packers.
If I were the Giants, Sam, I wouldn't put Jackson Dart anywhere near the starting lineup because the offensive line is awful. Where do you fall in that camp?
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't want him out there until Andrew Thomas is back in the lineup at left tackle. I would generally side with you, but I thought the same thing a year ago with Drake May. I thought it was risky and potentially damaging to put Drake May out there, given how bad the Patriots' offensive line and receiving core was a year ago. And Drake May looked pretty good behind that group. And if it's not going to damage him, I think you can put him out there. If you think it will, then definitely keep him on the bench. Certainly, I wouldn't be rushing him out there until Andrew Thomas is back at left tackle.
I know he's been a victim of circumstance, but Trevor Lawrence, again, okay. They beat a bad team in week one. What do you make of him and his long-term prospects in the NFL? Is it something that Liam Cohen can fix with enough time?
That's the big question. I mean, he was the one player in that pretty impressive victory that really didn't look any better. Last year, Brian Thomas, looked spectacular, and it should have been more productive, but Trevor Lawrence kept missing him or kept not being able to hit him with a lot of big plays when he was out there. And we saw the same thing in week one this week. Brian Thomas should have been more productive, and Trevor Lawrence was just not on the same page or wasn't able to hit him enough. He's got the talent. He's got all the physical tools, but he's consistently not been able to put it all together at the NFL level. And there have been some mitigating circumstances, obviously, a terrible head coach in there, some injuries. It's not all been his fault, but at some point you're being paid like one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. You need to have one of those seasons that lets everybody know it's definitely still in there.
Was that an anomaly from Daniel Jones? We hadn't seen that in 4 years in New York, and then he comes out, he looks like the second coming of Joe.
Yeah, part of it has got to be the Miami disaster. And this is always like a week two question mark. How much of what we saw, in these wild one-sided games were a really good team or a really bad team or something in the middle. Miami looked like a team that's spiraling out of control. But this is the best situation I think that Daniel Jones has ever been in. And, people overlook that, I think, this offseason. It's definitely the best group of receivers he's ever had to throw to. It's probably the best offensive line he's ever had in front of him as well. And it might be the best coaching scheme and setup that he's ever had as well. So all three elements to support a quarterback may be the best he's ever had connected to him in the NFL. I think it's not beyond the realms of possibility that Daniel Jones has, an easy career year this year for him. And if he does, the Colts roster, the Colts team is good enough to be a playoff contender if they get viable quarterback play.
All right. So here in Atlanta, the big concern is obviously the loss of Caleb McGarry, who effectively would have been Penix Jr.'s blindside this year. They couldn't run the ball at all against Tampa in week one, but Penix did look good throwing the ball. What was your evaluation of the Falcons offense?
Yeah, I did. I think definitely that offensive line is a bit of an issue now. It's a really unfortunate injury for them to get kind of on the eve of the season when, you don't have quality right tackles available just kicking around that you do have in some other positions. You can go out there like the Eagles and sign a guy like Za'Darius Smith off the street. That guy can start and bring serious pressure for basically any team in the NFL. You can't find those guys, on the offensive line right before the season starts. They're just not there. So it was definitely a big blow for them. And I think they're still figuring out what that's going to mean. They're trying to figure out what limitations that does place on the offense. And I think there'll definitely be some. But, last season with Kirk Cousins and then Michael Penix Jr., I think that coaching staff, that offense showed the ability to adapt week on week and get it figured out as the year wore on. I think they'll do that this year as well.
Before I let you go, did the Chargers beating the Chiefs say more about the Chargers maybe finally unleashing Justin Herbert or just another year of a Chiefs slow start?
Maybe a bit of both. I think it was definitely impressive that the way they did it, they went out there and they were aggressive and they stayed aggressive with this passing attack. Greg Roman, Jim Harbaugh, they've kind of become caricatures at this stage, these old dinosaur coaches that just want to run the ball and they don't want to pass at all. And they term, offensive linemen or weapons, that kind of thing. But they came out there passing and they stayed passing all the way through the game. And it worked. So I think you have to credit those guys as very good coaching staff at this point. But I think, again, you know, Kansas City lost important parts of that passing attack. They're down arguably their top two receivers, at least for a period of time. And, you know, we keep expecting this offense to kind of get its old explosive self back, but it needs, you know, the receivers that are supposed to be there, I think, for that to ever happen. And I think for a while now, we haven't seen them with that group. And that's not going away anytime soon.
Real quick, we talked about the off-the-field stuff, but just from a football perspective, does Tyreek Hill going back to the Chiefs make sense to you?
A little bit, in terms of he definitely does give them some explosive ability. Obviously, he's got some familiarity with Mahomes. You know, they had a very good connection when he was still there. I think that's kind of the only way that it makes sense, though. Like, if you could just plug Tyreek Hill on their roster right now, would he upgrade them? Absolutely. But do they want him with his contract, with his attitude, those types of things? I think that becomes a lot more difficult to sell yourself on.
Sam, appreciate the time. As always, we'll be checking out the pod. We'll chat soon.
Anytime, guys. Take it easy.
All right, Sam Munson there of Check the Mic podcast. Great stuff from him, as always, going through all the NFL headlines. And he, like many, does enjoy Michael Penix Jr., but it's the rest of the team that needs to perform well around him. Speaking of, we'll hear from QB1 to wrap up the program here on Chris Thomas Tonight. Turtle, with you until 10 o'clock. Michael Penix Jr. sound coming your way next. Last chance for romance here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is Chris Thomas Tonight. Turtle, with you for a couple more minutes and a lot to do in a little bit of time. So let's waste no time. I said this to start the show. If you missed it, if you're joining us later in the program, thank you, first of all. I'm Chris Thomas, Turtle, with you every weeknight here on 92.9 The Game, 6 to 10. We were on to something here, Oren Romain and I. Once in a while, like a broken clock, you get something right. You know, blind squirrel finds a nut, sort of a thing. Nah, that's not giving us enough credit. We did a good job. You know what? I'm not afraid to say it, as Oren literally pats himself on the back, as we should. We were ahead of the curve on this one. Everybody else is starting to come around to this narrative that's been started up about UGA and Tennessee on Saturday. What is that narrative, you may ask? Well, I'm glad you did. UGA's offense, is it ready to go to Rocky Top? And that, man, talk about the Falcons and the Dogs having tough tests. Two of the loudest environments in sports they got to play against, respectively, in Minnesota and at Rocky Top. Is the offense ready? Is Gunnar Stockton, who's looked good, but not, you know, I mean, again, it is what it is. You're playing the teams that you're playing, but that's why we're asking the question. Also because Gunnar Stockton had some questions coming into the season from some peeps. So this is their first real big test. And Mr. Aguilar for the Tennessee Vols has been ripping it in the first couple of weeks of the season. And they're nothing to sneeze at. And they're at home. So Oren and I yesterday spent a good deal on the show talking about, between Georgia and Georgia Tech, which one of them do you feel better about? Which one do you have more concern about? And I just suggested, just put a pin in it, put a note in it, that the Georgia offense has some question marks on it right now. This is going to be a real test against Tennessee. And in that environment, if Gunnar Stockton is able to stay calm, cool, and collected and lead the charge. And then today on the radio station, I think everybody got the memo, Oren, because I heard it a lot. We're finally starting to shake off the cobwebs on this one and give it a real look-see. So again, I'm not a bragger. I'm not a guy who says, I told you so. I come on here and we're going to get as many things wrong as we're going to get right. That's just the nature of sports. Sports are unpredictable. As unpredictable as anything else. And that's why we love them so much. Because it's the one remaining thing that's live and in living color. It's not scripted, so we have no idea what's going to happen. at Rocky Top or in Minnesota or on the flats this weekend. But we prognosticate and we give our best examples of what we think is going to happen. And I'll just like to say, I told you so. That's all. Just a little I told you so at 9:43 on a lovely hump day here in the great city of Atlanta, great state of Georgia. Speaking of, let's hear a couple of things from Kirby Smart, and then we'll wrap up with some Michael Penix Jr. talk here on 92.9 The Game. It's Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle, Kirby Smart was talking about Joey Aguilar and just how good this guy has been for Tennessee.
Went really efficiently. He's got great arm talent. He's a really good athlete. You can tell he understands the system. He gets the ball out quickly. He's been very accurate. You know, he's had some really well-thrown balls, a couple that they've dropped in crucial times. But he makes some good throws.
Yeah, he's got 5 touchdowns in 2 games, and he's thrown for nearly 600 yards. This kid has been electric. The transfer from UCLA, where Nico is now sinking their season very fast. We're UCLA. We're from California.
I'm just really excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm just excited to be here, man. You may not know much. Yeah, you may not know much about us, but it's us and it's USC. Questions? We referenced that last night. It's just
sure you guys don't know too much about UCLA, but our football program. But we're in LA.
So good.
Just like clockwork. Anytime somebody mentions that at UCLA, I gotta play it.
We just had the 18th anniversary of Mike Gundy's "I'm a Man, I'm 40."
You know, he's like 58 years old now.
That's crazy. That was 18 years ago. I remember where I was in my room back home in New Jersey when SportsCenter first showed that.
I'm a man.
I'm 40. You talk to me. You know, there's entire YouTube videos out there dedicated to people recreating that rant word for word. It's pretty good.
Oh.
Yeah. It's pretty good. If you have a second on YouTube, just go and search Mike Gundy rant recreation. There's some pretty creative people out there. Kirby Smart was also talking about having a play at Rocky Top in the first SEC game.
Your approach to your game planning is, defensively and offensively, you have to think about that. And me being in this league for a long time, it plays a factor on the ability to execute when you're in an environment that maybe someone's never been in. And you have to be smart about what you're asking them to execute, because at the end of the day, that's what it is. Who can execute, who can block and tackle, and who can be physical.
Yeah, and they're going to have their hands full in a raucous environment. But Kirby Smart's as good of a coach, if not the best coach, definitely the best coach in college football right now. So he'll have his guys ready. It's just a matter of execution, as it always is. All right, to wrap up the show here with just a couple minutes left, let's hear from QB1. He did speak today. Oh, the first thing I want to harp on here is what we've been talking about all show long, and that is needing to improve in the running game. This was Michael Penix Jr.
It's always been about the run game. I feel like, obviously, like I said, mentioning Bijan and Tyler, you know, with those guys on our team, you know, we gotta have a big time run game, because they bring that factor, and so we definitely want to make sure that we pick up on that. And that's every week. We feel like, obviously, I feel like our run opens up our passes and stuff like that, you know, but at the end of the day, we're going to do whatever it takes to win.
Did you just hear that, y'all?
Gotta be better.
Our run opens up our passes.
Got to be better in the run. Speak on it, Michael.
Yeah, speak on it. I've been speaking on it for 4 hours here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Come on, man. QB1 knows it.
He does.
We all know it.
We do.
The American people know it.
They do.
Michael Penix Jr. was also talking about, listen, man, it's not just about the pistol, which is what we were talking about before, but I can play any scheme, anytime, anywhere, boss.
I like everything. It don't matter if I'm in pistol, underneath. That's just some game plan stuff, whatever zero I want us to do. You know, I can't really pinpoint something I like about it or don't like about it, to be honest. It's just what I've been in, you know, my whole life. You know, I actually started out under the center when I first started playing quarterback. But when I got to college, it was all mainly pistol. But
I can tell you what I don't like about it. The fact that it's becoming a thing again. I don't want to hear about it. Enough. We went through this song and dance last year with the stupid formation. Whatever, man. Just whatever works. I don't care if it's shotgun, under center, 7 yards back, 5 yards back, whatever, however many drops he needs to take and steps in his drop back. I don't care. Just get it done. Make the plays. Have more than 69 yards on the ground. Come on, man. Don't let this stupid term become a thing again. I had my fill of it last year. Penix was also talking about what it means to play in prime time.
It's exciting. It's big time. It's NFL football. We ready for it. I'm excited for it. I think what my second game last year was a primetime game, and you know, it's what we're here for. It's what we came. That's what we put in all the work for. You know, all our lives to get and be able to play in big time moments like this. So,
do you remember how many primetime games we have this year? Five. That is, I believe, the second most in the NFL. And this one is going to go a long way for people to say if they want to see the Falcons in primetime four more times after this. Because if we lay a stinker, you already know what the narrative is going to be. Well, the Falcons don't deserve all those primetime games. It's a big game, y'all. We got to step up and make this one happen. One more from QB1 before we get out of here. He was talking about where his confidence level is right now.
Yeah, I mean, a lot. You know, just seeing the guys, you know, always ready to respond. You know, whenever they went up, you know, just being able to respond and, you know, come back with a score of our own. And just, you know, that's just showing everybody that, you know, this team, we're going to fight all the way into the end. And the guys, they want to win real bad. And I do, too. So we're going to definitely get some wins on our column. So,
yeah, Michael Penix Jr., definitely not the issue last week. He was great in what he was asked to do. He was asked to do a whole lot. He was asked to throw the damn ball 42 times, which certainly, again, as everyone has repeated now ad nauseum, that we're a few days removed from the game. That's not the game plan, y'all. That's not the game plan. The game plan is to go out there and have at least a balance, if not a favored attack, to the rushing side. And then let Penix use that magical arm to finish it off. And essentially, in the fourth quarter, if you have a lead, lean on Tyler Allgeier to let him be, as Dave Archer calls him, the bowling ball of razor blades to allow him to seal up a win. That would be the ideal game plan for the Falcons. Not having Penix having to get into a shooting match with Baker Mayfield, who scored three touchdowns and was their leading rusher, and also had three critical first downs on third down. That's a matchup. Baker's been in this league. He was a borderline MVP last year. You know, that's a lot to ask for Michael Penix Jr. in his fourth NFL start, first as the official QB1 to do. And you didn't get it done because you couldn't, because Baker got the better of you again because of gap integrity, because of lanes, because of pressures, because of all this crap that we've been talking about all week long. It's just, it's the same old song and dance for me. That is the most frustrating part. It's not that mistakes are being made, right? Mistakes are always going to be made. It's the NFL. It's football. There's going to be mistakes made every single Sunday. That's not what I'm saying. It's the same deadly, costly mistakes affecting this football team year after year after year. Costly penalties. Inability to be effective in the red zone. Inability to avoid giving up chunk yardage touchdown plays, which is going to be huge versus Minnesota on Sunday. Because if y'all remember last year, Minnesota basically became the second running of the air raid offense and was throwing bombs all over the field. You can't have it. You can't have it. Sam Darnold, Sam Darnold have four touchdowns in that game last year? I think he did. It was something like that. It was something absolutely crazy like that. And they absolutely torched the Atlanta Falcons last year. So I need it to be a situation where this team learns from their mistakes in week one and shows us, all of us, the media, the fans. He had five touchdowns.
347 yards and five touchdowns.
Come on, y'all. Sam Darnold.
By the way, we sacked him four times.
Yeah. Tell me about those sacks, Oren. Tell me about how valuable they are.
Impactful sacks,
yeah,
sir. Look how many pressures we have.
Yeah, those pressures, those sacks. Tell me how invaluable they are. Good Lord. All right.
He had six incompletions on the day. 6 incompletions.
How many yards did Justin Jefferson have?
Oh, boy. Let's check Justin Jefferson. Let's check all the stats in this
187.
Game.
How many did he have? 3 touchdowns?
He went for 132 and 2 touchdowns. Jordan Addison went for 133 and 3 touchdowns.
Unbelievable. Well, Jordan Addison won't be in this game. There's no, that. There's that.
One half of those of there's 15 catches those guys had. Half of those catches will go elsewhere. That so that's
that
plus.
Game and the Denver game were just so embarrassing last year. But hopefully that's put behind us and we can learn from our mistakes. That'll do it for this edition of Chris Thomas Tonight. Turtle, I'll be back with you tomorrow, Thursday Shorty Show, leading you into a great Thursday night matchup between the Commanders and the Packers. Excited to talk about that one and break it down with you. By the way, Oren's 2-0. I'm 1-1. So he's off to an early lead. See if he can get a revenge spot after I've won the last couple of years at our football bet every single year. All right, that'll do it for this edition of Chris Thomas Tonight. Excited to chat with y'all tomorrow on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.